everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining us for another session in the Born Data to Action webinar series. We're so happy to have you here with us today. Today's webinar focuses on AI at Born, from foundational methods to the frontiers of perinatal health. Before we begin today's webinar, we acknowledge that Born Ontario, hosted at CHEO, is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe Nation. We honor the enduring presence of First Nations, Inuit, and Métis peoples and recognize their long-standing stewardships of these lands, waters, communities, and knowledge systems. As we explore health AI research at Born Ontario, we recognize that AI and health data are shaped by historical and social contexts, including colonialism, systemic racism, and inequities in healthcare and research. These contexts influence whose experiences are represented and how technologies are developed and applied. Also, as we gather today, we recognize that many participants are joining from communities across Ontario and beyond, on the traditional territories of diverse Indigenous nations. We invite you to take a moment to reflect on the land you are on and the Indigenous peoples who have cared for it. My name is Mariah Maddock, and my role at Born is Strategic Partnership and Engagement Coordinator. I will be hosting today's webinar. I am joined by my colleague Tammy Kipfer, Communications Specialist, who will be managing the chat box and other items behind the scenes. Now I'm very pleased today to introduce to you our presenters. Our first presenter is Dr. Kevin Dick. Dr. Dick is an AI data scientist at Born Ontario and an investigator level 2 at the CHEO Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario Research Institute, CHEO-RI, where they lead interdisciplinary research advancing AI for maternal, fetal, and population health. Their work focuses on explainable and privacy-preserving AI, scalable health data infrastructure, and clinically integrated machine learning for early prediction of adverse pregnancy and neonatal outcomes. Dr. Dick bridges biomedical informatics, machine learning, and high-performance computing to develop transparent, reproducible, and equitable AI systems, while mentoring interdisciplinary teams in advancing responsible medical AI. They hold a PhD in biomedical engineering and are a recipient of the Governor General's Gold Medal. And our next speaker is Alibek Kruglikov. Alibek is a postdoctoral fellow at Born and the CHEO Research Institute, where he focuses on advancing autism spectrum disorder, ASD screening, through the use of artificial intelligence. He completed his PhD at the University of Ottawa and has taught data science and machine learning. His research interests center on developing and applying AI solutions to improve healthcare outcomes. Outside of work, Alibek enjoys movies, music, and playing soccer. And our next speaker is Heather Howley. Heather is a passionate health research leader. She is a certified health executive with 30 years of research experience spanning laboratory, clinical, and policy settings, who specializes in research strategy, program development, academic coaching, and scientific writing. She joined Born Ontario in 2023 as its inaugural director of research, building a mission-driven research to support a perinatal learning health system. This includes foundational and applied AI research that leverages Born's immense data assets, compute infrastructure, and expertise to improve perinatal and child health care and outcomes across the province. Being recorded, a recording will be shared with participants when it is available. And today we encourage you to submit your questions at any time using the Q&A box. We'll do our best to address as many as possible during the discussion following today's presentation. Before we begin, I'd like to mention that today's webinar has been accredited for continuing professional development. The session's been certified by the College of Family Physicians of Canada for up to 1 MainPro Plus certified activity credit. It is also an accredited group learning activity, Section 1, under the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada's Maintenance of Certification Program, and has been approved by the University of Ottawa's Office of Continuing Professional Development. Participants may claim up to 1 hour with credits calculated automatically. In addition, all Bourne Ontario webinars, including today's session, are reviewed and approved by Sonography Canada. Certificates of webinar attendance will be issued within 4 weeks of the webinar. Our speakers today have no conflicts of interest to declare, and I'll now turn it over to you, Kevin, to get us started.
Awesome. Thank you so much for the introduction. I'll just share my slides. Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present to everyone. So today's presentation largely has three learning objectives. The first being to describe at the end of this presentation the foundational AI research projects that are happening here at Bourne, Ontario, that seek to address various health AI challenges. The second being to summarize the arc from kind of foundational research on one end all the way through to clinical application on another. And then finally, to recognize how new funding opportunities can emerge from this work and different collaborations can be created as a result of it. So, to kind of kick things off, I've been working in the area of AI for a number of different years. And I think it's important in this, what we consider kind of age of AI, to kind of put things into a historical perspective. Artificial intelligence or AI really is a relatively young field. Really, at the outset, the term AI was first coined in around 1956 at a conference that brought together a lot of the leading thinkers. In around computational intelligence at the time. And what's really interesting is over the last decades, really the field of AI has kind of moved between two different kind of cycles of what are known as AI summers, where there's been a lot of hype and interest and funding that has supported AI research, and then usually followed then by what is known as a dark age or an AI winter, where kind of the hype has been overblown and funding more or less dried up until then another cycle began. And usually these came with significant breakthroughs in certain computational methods that ultimately kind of underpin a lot of the methods that define what AI is today. And what's really interesting is we are currently in what we consider the third golden age of AI. It's really a period that was kicked off more or less around 2012. And so when most people think of the term AI, I think a lot of people's minds go directly to something like ChatGPT. And while ChatGPT itself is a very capable and interesting technology, it's a chatbot capable of accomplishing numerous human intelligence tasks. The Venn diagram here largely tries to contextualize the idea that ChatGPT is really just a very small subset of what a broader term or the broader field of AI represents. And in fact, when we think of what ChatGPT is, it is a very specific type of large language model, LLM, so a model that specifically develops expertise or capabilities in natural language processing. And what this figure here represents is kind of the broad family of various types of technologies. Kind of in the center there in yellow is ChatGPT. It was basically released in late 2022, but there was considerable research in natural language processing and in LLM development that had started in around 2017, of which ChatGPT is now just a very known and popularized method, but that there's a broad and quite explosive field of different types of LLMs that have emerged since. And LLMs, again, are just one subset within the broad field of artificial intelligence. And I think one of the things that's important that when we talk about AI is to have a very specific understanding of the definitions or what we mean by different terms. And I would say the vast majority of contemporary AI research are actually in these kind of broader subfields known as machine learning and deep learning. And you can kind of get a sense from this Venn diagram how each of these different kind of terminologies and forms and models themselves are kind of subsets or examples of a broader field. And so machine learning is usually, I would say, in large part, what we concern ourselves with when we talk about AI. It's specifically the subfield that pertains to the automatic identification of patterns within data. And it is a, I would say, relatively well-founded field. I mean, it kind of started in the 1950s and has been kind of growing up until today. But really, when we think about these large-scale kind of artificial neural network models, we're talking then about deep learning. And so deep learning specifically is a subfield of machine learning. where not only do we operate on very large sums of data, but that it's the model itself learning kind of automatically kind of what is important within the data and what informs the predictions that it makes. And deep learning itself is a field that started largely in the 2012s and really kicked off the third kind of golden age of AI. And so all of this kind of culminates to where we are today and what we're hoping to present on, which is that Bourne itself has an AI Foundations lab, largely with the scope of trying to leverage these artificial intelligence methods, but also overlap with what Bourne is particularly good at, which is the collection of perinatal child health data. And specifically, we're interested in looking at how we can develop population-based screening algorithms. The important piece here being that we're not just looking at kind of subsets of cohorts of patients and whatnot, but rather to look at really the population level scale. And the idea of leveraging all that data would be to develop models that can predict accurately for different health outcomes across an entire population. And so the overarching goal of this initiative really is to improve the care and outcome of pregnant individuals and their children. And I'm grateful to co-lead a lot of this initiative along with my colleague, Dr. Christine Armour. And importantly, Dr. Christine Armour is the NPI who has been able to secure a lot of the funding that has supported this research so far. And so where that brings us, there's a really significant opportunity in leveraging AI based on the data that is available through Bourne. And so there we have basically 1.9 million linkable records for all pregnancies in Ontario since 2012. And of course, this wealth of data and kind of the richness of what it represents enables us to develop and train predictive population-level health models through the use of machine learning and deep learning. And the goal here ultimately is to potentially bring these into deployment and with the hopes that the models that we develop can improve healthcare outcomes. And so this specifically aligns with Prenatal Screening Ontario or PSO's oversight role, as well as, as we move further into the digital age, the idea of having a digital and interoperable perinatal record or a DOPR within which these models can live and generate their predictions and basically inform or provide information to the right party or the right individual or the right organization at a specific point in time. And so my specific team, so I lead what is known as the DIC AI Lab as part of this initiative, and we contribute much of the technical expertise in the development of this work. And what we're, so we're an embedded research laboratory, and our goals are largely to address some of these central challenges that would enable kind of this large-scale vision. And so the hopes is to address many of these challenges towards developing these next-generation population-level screening algorithms within the pre-perinatal and postnatal health landscape. The first challenge largely being outcome rarity. And so health conditions that we may be interested in predicting typically are what are known as rare by machine learning standards. That is to say, even a prevalence less than 10% is often difficult to model using AI because there's a dominating representation of information in the data set for the majority class, what we would consider kind of our controls. And we only have a very weak or rare signal to support that condition of interest. And so rare event modeling is a very important challenge within machine learning and something that concerns us when we think of applying these methods at scale. The second challenge is a lack of model trust. And so deep learning models in particular, given that they automatically learn different forms of kind of information or representations automatically, they're not always interpretable by those who are using the models. And so there's an emergent field known as explainable AI or XAI that seeks to address many of these challenges. And then, of course, we work with PHI. And so, traditional machine learning model, if we're trying to leverage, different wealths of data that might come from different sources, often we have to centralize a lot of that data and use it as part of our modeling. But that comes with a lot of consideration on how do we protect and secure the privacy of that information. And then the final challenge really is that prior to the establishment of this lab, there was a general kind of lack of AI expertise within Bourne. And so our team specifically looks to kind of bring in kind of funding and a growing team of expertise that can address many of these challenges and develop methods towards realizing this AI-driven organizational vision. That said, these are the research aims that we kind of prioritize as part of our research work. And so, specific to this rare event prediction challenge or outcome rarity, we're looking to specifically develop novel methods that work in a kind of rare event context. The second being that we want to build in trust and transparency in our AI models. And so, working specifically on developing explainable AI methods. This is particularly important as we move towards the integration of multiple forms of data, what is known as multimodal modeling. A mode of data being something like text, it can also be medical imaging, it could be time series data. The idea is, as we're integrating multiple forms of data, we want to ensure that the models are kind of focusing and using the right forms of information or developing the right patterns to ensure that we d establish a sense of trust in the models and within the predictions that they might make. And then the third, of course, being that we want to establish not just privacy protecting or privacy preserving AI methods, but that they also be efficient and cost effective. And my colleague Alabek will speak specifically to to an example project that seeks to answer some of these questions, but that ultimately we want to secure the data and ensure that all methods have kind of privacy preserving methods baked into them from the start. And so those first three aims largely are more on the technical or like foundational methods development side of things. Our fourth aim largely concerns with how do we actually bring all these different methods together into applied perinatal health research projects. And so this is so the fourth aim really concerns itself with developing models specific to health conditions that we're interested in developing predictive models for. And so I'm not going to get into the details of every single project that we've gone over, but I wanted to give a broad overview of exactly how we're kind of developing different methods and models towards some of these different aims. And if we kind of break them down between these two general, I would say, pillars, in blue being very much the foundational AI research work on trying to develop methods that specifically address some of these challenges. And then in orange, we have kind of those that specifically are applied to certain health conditions. Very briefly, we have done past work on deep learning methods that would take ultrasound images to predict different types of renal anomalies. We have a project specifically on developing AI predictive models for autism spectrum disorder. We're looking at methods on developing models to predict different forms of aneuploidies. And I'll have my colleague Alabek speak specifically to some of these. The two in particular coming kind of one project from each of these kind of two foundational pillars, synthetic versus encryption project, as well as the work on ASD. But I'll let him cover those details. The vision ultimately where we are trying to go is towards a fully integrated privacy preserving health AI framework. So the idea that pregnant individuals have multiple forms of health data that kind of define their trajectory over the course of the pregnancy and that kind of essentially contribute to kind of the early life, the early like health context of the child that is born. And that many of these different types of data, so things from medical records or laboratory tests or medical imaging, are collected in many ways by various province-wide data organizations. And the opportunity is that Bourne as a registry has this ability to kind of bring together and develop agreements with different registries to link much of this data to really the population within Ontario. Ultimately, with the goal that we move towards developing a kind of foundational AI model that could, at the course of various points in a pregnancy, provide model-based predictions on different health outcomes as they become relevant or as data becomes available over the course of a pregnancy. And really, this is to provide those predictions or that information to the right authority at the right point in time, whether that be a clinician, whether that be to the individual, whether that be to a specific organization. The goal is to ultimately bring many of these methods together. And so, really, we would define kind of this vision as developing a multimodal machine learning model to bring in multiple forms of data that not only do we predict for a singular type of of condition of interest, but that we could do multiple rare condition prediction. We would hope that these, like the intent is ultimately to integrate explainable AI and equity constraints within the models that we develop, all wrapped up in privacy-preserving mechanisms, and that this information and the predictions that are generated be available to the right authority at the right point in time. And this, I would say, is very much work towards a framework. While we are operating very much in the perinatal health continuum, the hope is that this form of modeling would be informative or instructive to other health AI researchers or registries and institutions, both nationally and perhaps even internationally, with the goal that the best methods or this form of machine learning model and integration of multiple sources of data become a standard way of approaching the integration of AI at a population health screening level. That said, that concludes my section of slides. I'll pass it over to Alabek, who will speak specifically to some of the projects that we've worked on quite recently.
Hello, can you hear me? Can you see my screen?
Yep, all good.
All good. Thank you very much, Kevin, for starting out. So, yeah, as Kevin said, I will be talking specifically about some of the projects we worked on. So the first will be a fundamental AI research project to do with synthetic data and encryption for the purposes of privacy preservation. So, when we work in machine learning in general, we usually start with your data. In our case, it's protected health information. In a very simple kind of way, you will train your model, then you deploy it using your incoming data. And of course, the specifics of what you're going to be deploying for can be different. But the main thing is that this particular pipeline is not privacy protected. And of course, the data are heavily regulated. So we need to be careful about how we use protected health information and make sure that we protect the privacy. So this pipeline here is not protected, but we will use it as a reference. And this particular project, we refer to it as a standard mode. So it's very efficient, but it's not really protecting our data. As alternatives, what we can use is we can synthesize data. So as an example, we can essentially use the original data with different versions of synthetic data generators to synthesize data and then train the model on the synthetic data. So this way, the model that we trained and deployed later does not actually have direct access to our protected health information. And then any incoming data can be used directly with this model in the same way as before. So in this case, the synthetic data will represent real data. And then most of the computation that happens inside here are going to be very similar or exactly the same as in the standard mode. Another alternative is to encrypt. So in this case, you would train your model on your protected health information as usual, but then you will encrypt the model. And then any new incoming data that you use for prediction will be also encrypted. So this way also the data are protected. In this case, the encryption of both the model and the data, they coarsen the mathematics inside them. So the results may also differ a little bit, but we hope that that is not really the case. So the mathematical things happening inside the training and deployment will be a bit different than in the standard mode and much more complex than in standard mode. So the goal for this project was to compare these two modes between themselves, but also with the standard mode, so without any privacy preservation, and to see how that affects the predictive performance and also how computationally expensive it is. So to actually know what can be practical in what kind of situations. To do this, we use six public healthcare data sets. They have different levels of complexities. So these are all public, so it's okay to share and reveal information in them. We don't really need to preserve them. And of course, the goal is to understand how the methods work later with real data. So what we do is we have this sort of apples to apples comparison where we compare the standard mode, so training different types of models on the data as are without any sort of privacy preservation. We do the same, but using synthetic data. And actually, well, I only have one chunk synthetic here, but we have five different synthetic methods. But all of them would synthesize the data and would train the model on the synthetic data. And lastly, we have full homomorphic encryption. So in this is a popular way of encrypting your data. So in this case, we train a model, then we use encrypted model and encrypted data. And for all of these pipelines, we keep as much as possible constants so that we can fairly compare them across each other. We evaluate them using various metrics in terms of how well the models predict. And we also keep resource profiling, meaning that we essentially record how much time is needed, how much resource is needed to perform these different methods. So just a very, very general high-level overview of the results is represented here with these radar plots. So here what we have the five different synthetic methods, and we have here the fully homomorphic encryption. So we can compare them also with the standard or real data benchmark, which is represented by the green dotted line on all of these plots. So, of course, naturally, as expected, the real is the best, but it's not privacy preserved. So the protection is not there. In any of these radar plots, just for understanding, for any axis, large means better. On top of the radar plot, we have the kind of how well the model predicts these kind of metrics. So recall precision, AUC, F1 score, and accuracy. On the bottom side, we have the performance metrics in terms of how quick it is, how much memory is needed to train the model, and also to use the model later for predictions. So again, the larger means faster, better, less memory needed. So what we can see here, of course, is that as expected, FHE is very, very slow, much slower than anything else that we looked at. But at the same time, their predictive performance is almost as good as using original raw data. One other interesting thing we saw is that specifically with this ARF method, adversarial random forests synthetic method, both prediction is quite good. It's close to being to real and FHE, and also we can see it's a lot faster, which is as expected also. So this was a very interesting and important finding for us. We have other analysis done that I'm not going to focus on here, but just as an example, we also looked at individual models, model architectures, and individual data sets, compared them across each other. So here's one example using specifically maternal healthcare data sets. We have three different types of data, models. So we have logistic regression, random forest, and XGBoost, all very popular classification models. And of course, we compare the real, represented by green, with all the different synthetic methods and FHE, so different variations of encryption. So an interesting finding here was that depending on the model type, results may be slightly different. So, for example, we see with XGBoost, encryption does not ever really reach the level of real data. So, specifically with XGBoost, we found that encryption may not be as effective. And ARF is still quite effective. So, this was a very interesting finding also for us. Now, just to look at the numbers in terms of the speed, so that there is some sort of a reference, we do see that broadly speaking, we can say that there are setup costs, so how much time you need to train a model, and also you have inference cost, which in this case we represent with this per patient column, so how much time you need to make a prediction using that model. So we do see that FHE is slower, but for example, for setup, it doesn't really matter. Yes, it is. Double the time of synthetic, roughly speaking, and it's a lot larger, but to be honest, in either case, it's just seconds, so it doesn't really matter. When it comes to inference, the situation is different, though. So you can see that the model type affects, but also, with FHE, it's so much slower. So you have macroseconds or milliseconds, or whatever those figures are, for the real data and the synthetic data, regardless of what kind of model you use, it's very, very fast per patient. But then you have 11 seconds here for random forest for one patient. 11 seconds doesn't sound like a lot, but imagine you have many, many patients, like 1,000 patients, that will be already 3 hours. And maybe you have more patients or records, right? Maybe this is something you have to do every day. Maybe this is something you have to do throughout the day, nonstop. So in that case, this becomes highly impractical. Whereas for real data and synthetic data, it's still very, very fast. Just a brief summary of the results. What we find is that adversarial random forest is a very effective synthesizer. So it's something that that we want to look more closely at. We do see that model architecture is important, and FHE performance specifically can vary in different model types. We do see that FHE may be less practical in real life situations. So depending on the context of how the model is going to be used, what kind of amounts of data are going to be used with, it will be important to consider these practical costs. Now, some future directions, some things we haven't yet explored, but it is possible to explore, is look at larger data sets, more complex models, and also evaluate security metrics, and practical evaluation can be done using some metrics also. What we did was just look at how practical it is, but potentially you could evaluate that also in some way. So now I would talk about the second part, more applied AI research projects. So I will focus on this two projects that are highly related to each other, that are both using transformer-based models to screen for autism spectrum disorder, but potentially can be extended to any kind of mental health screening. So to start off, the two projects are titled Elegant and Pillar. You can see the full extensions here, they're for the names. So Elegant is a project that had been already finished, completed, published by Kevin and some other colleagues. Pillar is a project that I am currently working on that is a continuation of Elegant. So both of these studies have been supported by PCYMH Collaboratory in at Chio Research Institute, and also supported by ICES, which is funded by Ontario Ministers of Health and Long-Term Care. No endorsement of funders or data providers is intended or should be inferred. They are very specific about the wording, so I'm just reading this off the slide. Thank you both, ICES and PCYMH. I will just give a brief introduction to the problem. So, of course, early development is very important in child development. So, especially when it comes to mental health. So, this is a time with both vulnerability and opportunity. And of course, the opportunity is for an early diagnosis of any kind of outcome as early as it can be done, so that support can be provided timely. And both the parents and the children, and the chances are not missed for this early support. Unfortunately, it is very difficult to diagnose some conditions in early childhood. So using machine learning has a high potential of helping out in this kind of case. And what we really want to do is to build a screening tool that will work on a province-wide level, or potentially maybe a national level, that will use the data that are provincial-wide. So in this case, we have a lot of sources of data, including Bourne, but also other organizations. And what we can do is combine the data in a way that they're representing a sequence of events. So this is a very simplified form, but it helps to understand the idea. It's basically that for any patient, we can view their history of medical events as a sequence of events. And that really helps to use it in what is called a transformer architecture, that is a really effective machine learning architecture that is originally designed to work with text. So some of you may be already familiar with this. I won't go into the details of the calculations inside. That's not really the focus today, but the main thing is that this architecture is the background of large language models and the chatbots like ChatGPT, of course. The effectiveness of them, and the coolest part about them is the way they work with sequential data. So text is, of course, also sequential data. You have a sentence of different words, and the way the words relate to each other is important to consider for the model. So this entire architecture is designed in a way so that sequential data can be processed really effectively in the computer. And this can be applied to electronic healthcare records also. So if we consider electronic healthcare record as a sequence of events, it can be directly applied to this architecture. And this had been done before, and this had been proposed here. For example, we are referring to BERT with H transformer architecture. I will just focus on this first part, the embedding part, because that's the main thing for us right now. So the electronic healthcare records, we can just represent for one patient as a sequence of different diagnoses and the ages that the person had at those diagnoses, which, doctor visit number it was, and so forth. So essentially, it's a series of sequences in this kind of representation. What happens inside the model is that those are converted into numbers, and those numbers start to be random. And then, of course, in the process of neural network learning, they will be changed so that the model converges. And essentially, what you can think about it is that the model understands what a sequence of diagnosis codes are. And how they relate to each other, and is able to understand what follows next, what could be in the middle between the diagnosis. So that kind of understanding is a good foundation on which you can build another model that will be able to classify individuals. So in this case, use electronic healthcare records to evaluate risks of a specific condition. So what we did is, of course, use this for ASD, so autism spectrum disorder, specifically in Elegant project and currently are doing in Pillar project. The results for Elegant were really promising. So you can see the metrics here. These are really high for this type of a problem. Of course, ASD prediction using using electronic healthcare records is a very complex problem. But the results are really promising. And also, what was done is explainable AI framework. So we can see which specific features affected the prediction of the model. So that really helps us to understand if the model is performing well, but also how it can be improved potentially. So, what we are currently working on is adding some more data using more laboratory results, for example, but also some additional data sets. We're also experimenting with a methodology and trying to experiment with explainable AI methodology also. So this is the work that I'm currently working on. This is to be done. Elegant had been already published. Pillar hopefully will be soon also. And then in future, this framework can be applied to any kind of outcomes, really. It can be adapted to a broader set of outcomes and can be very, very effective on a provincial or even national level. And the long term, of course, goal is to, to provide a tool for clinicians to use for screening so that, specific individuals can be identified to be later diagnosed by the clinicians. Of course, the model is not supposed to make the diagnosis itself. It's just a screening tool. The diagnosis itself is still done by clinicians. And this can help the diagnostic delays because it will highlight those individuals who really should be evaluated. It can be done across the population scale given the data that we have. In the end, will provide more equitable and more effective access to resources that are required. So this is the end for me. Thank you very much. The next side will the next part is with Heather.
I'm really happy today to talk to you about our vision of AI at Bourne. So we tend to think about AI in terms of three pillars. So starting with AI foundations. So that's what Kevin described earlier, and Alabek described some projects about how we're tackling key challenges to applying AI in this space. We also have applied AI projects. Alabek described one of them, where we're really using those tools and the data that we have at Bourne to predict health conditions of interest across the spectrum of perinatal health. And finally, deployment and uptake. And this is really unique to Bourne, where we have an environment where we can not only develop test or train development test models, but also deploy them through programs like Prenatal Screening Ontario and Bourne Connect. And we do this across the spectrum, so from preconception, perinatal, and child health. And we, foundational to this work, of course, is doing this in partnership, both with people with lived experience, clinicians, and other partners in the system, data governance and health protection, and upholding health equity and Indigenous health sovereignty. And BORN is a program at CHEO. So we use CHEO's principles and framework for responsible AI. And this allows us to uphold ethics and keep people at the center of everything we do while working in an agile and fast-changing environment. So when it comes to predictive algorithms, Alabek described two of our projects, Elegant and Pillar. And we have like a small set of projects, I would say. We're at the beginning of our journey. So we also have a project called Indicate that is funded through the PSI Foundation to predict aneuploidy and other prenatal conditions. And we're also just beginning and trying to find funding for AI for Safe Start. So this is again applying AI to our data to predict preterm birth and forecast NICU surges. And really, BORN is an, we really envision AI at BORN as an ecosystem. And to enable this vision of translational AI, we rely on not only the expertise and the infrastructure we have at BORN, but these small projects that we're starting are building new partnerships and new collaborations that will allow us and providing proof of concept data that will allow us to secure larger funding. And of course, we not only have compute infrastructure here at BORN, but we also have implementation infrastructure that will allow us to take those discoveries and actually translate them into real benefits for pregnant individuals, children, and their families. So we like to think that we are providing comprehensive prenatal care across the province, and we all do our part. But prenatal care or perinatal care spans different health sectors of the health system. So although this care produces a lot of data and a lot of that lives at BORN, it's siloed across these different sectors. So for example, a pregnant individual will receive her routine care in primary care. They may then go to a private lab for ultrasound or laboratory services. And they may visit acute care, say for an emergency department visit. And even if every clinician in that pathway does the right thing, signals can be missed because no one has a view of the trajectory of care. And that is really the genesis of BORN, is that integration piece. So BORN was established many years ago to capture data from across the health system, integrate it, and yield real benefits from that data. Currently, we have about 3,500 users that either collect, share, or analyze data from the BIS, that's our on cloud-based health information system at BORN. And we've done a lot of work in that system to improve care. And as a prescribed registry, BORN has the authority to share data within the circle of care to facilitate and improve care. And to date, we've done that largely historically. So we do have prospective work, such as missed newborn screening alerts, where we will let NSO know if we have a birth and no newborn screening record. But largely, our analyses are retrospective. So we're telling what has happened. But AI will give us the ability to do more predictive work and be able to provide clinicians and individuals with information about their health and suggest ways to maximize outcomes. But to do this, we still need better data. So I saw a question in the chat about our data. So we have probably now about 2 million data, not data elements, but data points in the BIS. So we have, Ontario has 140,000 births a year. We capture data from almost all of those births. So we can link that data externally as well with CIHI data, for example, or via ICES in Ontario. And so in terms of comprehensive perinatal data, This is where I wanted to take a second and talk about Born Connect. So Born Connect is a new initiative of our new program at Born that is really focused on delivering connected care. And its first initiative is building a digital Ontario perinatal record, or the DOPR plus. So the currently in Ontario, about 85% of perinatal clinicians use the Ontario perinatal record, but it's a PDF or a paper-based form that is typically faxed around. So Bourne has received money from the Ministry of Health to modernize that record, to make it digital and interoperable, and allow us to deploy workflows through that record. And in that way, we both can capture data, analyze it, and then improve care through it. And it'll have both patient and facing clinician facing portals for that record. And through our prescribed registry status, as I mentioned before, Bourne is authorized to share that PHI, so we can really make a difference and facilitate better care. And there's a link there and a QR code. Our last webinar series was actually specifically on this, so you can, if you haven't seen it already, you can check that out. In the last bit of my presentation, I just wanted to talk about the dreaded valley of death. So I've been in research for many years, and I see a lot of research with a lot of great ideas and projects that then sort of die on the vine when the funding runs out, because they haven't really thought through about how they're going to get this into care or what the next steps for that innovation are. And this is true in the AI space as well, especially given all the hype as we are in a summer, as Kevin suggested. So I mentioned earlier that Bourne has avenues to deploy AI algorithms. So ones that we develop in-house, but also ones that may be developed externally that are aligned with our mandate. And primarily, this would be through two programs. So Prenatal Screening Ontario is a program of Bourne that was established in 2016 to oversee prenatal screening services across the province. It started with aneuploidy screening. It's launching a new prenatal screening in September called fetal blood group genotyping. And we're also actively looking at preeclampsia as screening and prevention. And in its role as an oversight role, it has the ability to deploy some of these algorithms that we or others may develop. And finally, Bourne Connect is actively looking at how AI can help deliver personalized insights, decision support, or pregnancy navigation. So in closing, I just wanted to highlight how Bourne brings together the expertise, the infrastructure, as well as the data to conduct AI research, to use that research, and to really turn data into better outcomes for pregnant individuals, children, and their families across Ontario. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much, Kevin, Alabek, and Heather, for this fascinating presentation. We've covered a lot of ground today, from the foundational methods that make this work possible to how these approaches are being applied in perinatal and child health. And we'd now like to open the conversation up and take some questions from the audience. I'll start with a pre-submitted question, and it's around broader applications. So you've shared today several different AI approaches and applications. How transferable are these methods to other areas of healthcare or clinical practice?
I'm happy to jump in on this one. So the work that we presented here, largely, I'll use the example from the Autism Spectrum Disorder project. So as much as this was combining different types of data sources from numerous different organizations, combining them into a way that we can model them specifically for ASD. What's exciting, or I would say the general ethos that we try to approach when developing our different methods, is rather than necessarily focusing on developing methods specific for one condition, we try to develop a lot of the computational infrastructure and a lot of the way that we pre-process data and a lot of the modeling more as a framework. The idea being that much of the information that is captured or that represents a certain patient's health trajectory remains largely the same regardless of the conditions that they ultimately are diagnosed for. And so the idea here is if we treat this largely as kind of the framework development of different methods, a lot of that same information could be used to predict for, say, ASD. It could be used to predict for different types of, say, aneuploidies, different types of, in this case, we're focusing on neurodevelopmental conditions. But the idea is that the kind of the computational infrastructure we're trying to work towards establishing is transferable to other forms of health conditions or health outcomes that might be of interest. And so I would say it's relatively high, although there's a lot of consideration that goes into how we develop these methods, on how data is pre-processed, what is considered specific, as an input, say for certain models. And I would say the broad thinking is at least the way that I like to think about these things is not just considering, developing specific models for individual health conditions, but eventually moving in a direction where we can develop models that could predict for numerous conditions kind of simultaneously. Again, health information is quite rich, and that data can be used for many, many different outcomes. But it's a great question.
Thank you so much, Kevin. And you discussed the importance of using integrated AI within equity constraints. Can you give us an example of what this would look like in practice?
Yeah, I'll say how this work is being done currently. I would say across machine learning, I'll kind of take this question in a few different directions. The way that most, I would say, prototypical machine learning works is you have input data, you do some form of modeling, you generate kind of a series of outcomes, and you have some evaluation framework to understand it. And what typically happens after the fact is those equity concerns are usually analyzed post hoc or kind of after all of the modeling work is done. And so you can assess or evaluate essentially how, good does your model do across various like equity considerations across different socio-demographic variables. And you can get a kind of concrete understanding of, how equitable is the resulting model specific to different subsets of the population. And that's how things are largely being done. But what is often seen is the model will actually operate inequitably. It'll actually perform better for certain subgroups than others. And this is just a key. Like, I would say it's an open research question in the broader field. It can go as far or as early in the pipeline as, what data are you actually collecting, and does that data contain biases, and does your model then, incidentally or not, replicate that bias is an important question that definitely needs to be answered. And part of that is on the data collection side, but part of it can also be taken into account as part of the modeling. And that's one of the, I would say, kind of open research questions we're interested in is how can we actually embed equity constraints within the modeling itself? So the idea here is even if there is a certain degree of bias within your data, you would hope to use the information about different subgroups as a way of constraining. This is what we would call like a multi-objective constraint, where one of the constraints in how the model learns to represent its data attempts to not just become as good a predictor as possible, but that as good as possible in a way that enforces a degree of fairness across the different subpopulations. It's an open area of research that we're looking at currently, and we're trying to integrate as part of some of our ongoing projects. But it is a key challenge and not one that has a direct answer. And there's a few different ways you can go about approaching it.
Thank you again, Kevin. And this next question touches on themes of equity, harms, and trust. How is Born evaluating and mitigating potential unintended harms from AI, particularly when it comes to health equity, bias, and maintaining public trust?
I can kick that off. This is top of mind for us at Born, not only with AI, but predating AI. And I think it starts with partnerships and understanding what the community needs and wants. And then when you layer AI onto that, I think you need to ask questions about what is missing in the data and be careful that AI doesn't encode biases. So we have in health equity advisory groups, both internal and external. And we'll be doing this in partnership with communities. And I think we have a lot to learn from our Indigenous partners in terms of the principles they use around data governance as well that could be applied to other populations. I don't know, Kevin, if you have any technical sort of responses to that question.
The ethos usually in the machine learning community is whatever data comes in, it's a very like garbage in, garbage out kind of thing. Like your model will only really be as good as what information is contained and stored within the data. I have every respect for how data is collected, and in the years that I've worked in this field, it's challenging when you the known biases on how data is collected become a significant limiting factor in just what the modeling can do. And so if you're not actually collecting data that represents like I saw in the chat a particular question around paternal health factors. I think a lot of the onus when we think of a lot of these maternal health conditions, there's a lot of onus that is put on the pregnant individual or the mother in these cases simply by means of not having paternal data as richly and well captured as possible. And so when we interpret the results, I think there's a lot of precision that, and this is kind of between the technical considerations versus, how do you actually understand the results of a given model? By only considering, say, maternal health factors, we are kind of incidentally putting quite a burden on, just one factor or, one pair within that partnership contributing to the birth of this child. And so it's a complex answer, but I think there's a particular importance in how we interpret the results of AI modeling. I think there's a lot of kind of over-promising or kind of hand-waving of exactly what the model is doing, and that a lot of care and precision is needed in how we interpret the results, whether that's from a modeling standpoint or from just the original data as it comes in. So all very great questions.
There's lots here. And there's one question around AI hallucinations. And there was also a couple of pre-submitted questions about this. So, final question for today will be around that. So, AI hallucinations are an important concern when applying these technologies in healthcare. How are you addressing the risk of hallucinations or inaccurate outputs of this type of work?
Maybe I can take this one, so I get to answer something. So with hallucinations, it's actually a great question. Luckily for us, this is not something that we are currently facing, because it's important to distinguish between generative AI and other types of machine learning. So in our case, we're not really generating any data, unlike ChatGPT, for example, generates text for you. So hallucination is really a problem for the generative models. When you're trying to classify or to predict a certain number, for these kind of problems, this is not really a problem, hallucination. However, in future, we are planning to work with generative models also. So, for example, with image data, it's possible to generate synthetic data, but also with tabular data, of course. So in those cases, there are a lot of metrics to evaluate how closely related your generated data are to the original data. And both, they're supposed to be close in terms of distributions or the statistics for each column, but at the same time, you don't want to completely repeat. But at the same time, you want it to actually represent something. So there are some metrics, some things to consider. But yeah, I guess that would be the closest thing to a hallucination in our context. But again, currently, right now, not really a problem for us, luckily. In terms of using AI in general, not necessarily just to do with medicine, of course, this is something to consider, hallucinations, to take any kind of generated outputs with a pinch of salt, I guess. So double check on things, especially when you get references. Check if those references actually exist. Check if they actually say what the claim is, because that is sometimes still an issue with the generative models.
You're all back. And thanks again, Heather and Kevin, for speaking today. And I just want to thank everyone for their questions. We will be passing these on to the speakers, and they may be following up with you directly with a response. Once again, you're invited to join us for future Born webinars. We also wanted to note that there will be a post survey pop up in your browser. We would greatly appreciate your feedback as it helps us improve future sessions. And thank you all today for your time, your interest in this important work, and we hope that you found the session valuable.